answer. But yeah, I'm back. John Wick, ladies and gentlemen, and that is the theme of the show today, John Wick. This is Go Watch a Movie, episode 20. I'm Kelvin.
And I'm Robert.
Welcome, everyone. Before we get started, we want to go ahead and say it is Black History Month, and I wanted to go ahead and say thank you to all those people who sacrificed and continue to sacrifice and went through heck to afford me the privilege to have the freedoms that I have today. Like I said, we are Go Watch a Movie, a movie discussion podcast where we discuss movies to the fullest. We will be discussing John Wick and John Wick Chapter 2 today. So I recommend watching John Wick, both of those movies, or, you know, join in and watch them yourself or whatever, you know. Yeah. So as normal, entertainment news last week. Let's see here. I don't know if you've heard, but Disney is following suit with the what Universal did with the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, which is amazing. They are doing a Star Wars land opening in 2019.
Have I heard about that?
I cannot wait. Like, I was more excited for Harry Potter, which I might get raked on the coals for, but I'm excited for this too because Disney has the money to make this like spectacular.
Right.
Cantinas, they already have Vader and the stormtroopers walking around. I can't wait for that. So Netflix, kind of under the radar, announced that they are releasing a Castlevania show. I don't know if you ever played
based off the Nintendo game.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. They are doing that, and I'm excited to see what they do. There's no trailers or anything. They just kind of announced it in a low way, actually. It was a press conference where they were announcing other shows, and they just slid in there. Castlevania.
Yeah, that should be pretty big news, I would think.
Yeah, it's a loved game. I mean, there have been a couple more like since then, but yeah. So, yeah, and I had a couple Keanu facts, since both of the movies we're covering today are Keanu Reeves. Did you know, since The Matrix, he has done almost all of his own stunts.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently, he really, really, really loves that. Getting in there and getting dirty with it. And he's an actual martial artist. He's a black belt in judo, I believe, which is evident in the movies. But it was pretty cool and pretty interesting. Yeah. And then there was another one. Oh, well, this is just because I enjoy motorcycles. But he also has a motorcycle company. He's co-owner of a motorcycle company. Motorcycles are extremely expensive. They start like 50K. Yeah. But yeah, they're pretty cool bikes because he's a big time driver and rider and that sort of thing. But yep. Good old Keanu. So, with that said, I want to introduce someone that will from now on announce all of our movies and things like that. Because Arnold got expensive. Who else did we have? We had some other people stop by, but anyway, Watchbot. I had a hand in making Watchbot.
Hello, I am Watchbot. Calvin made me from old VCR, TV, and old computer parts. He has filled my head with old movie facts, names, dates, etc. For some odd reason, he did this while wearing panties on his head. This confused me. Anywho, I am here to replace that hack Arnold. Arnold, you're fired, ha, ha, ha.
And he has a sense of humor. Thank you for the introduction of yourself, sir. But if you wouldn't mind going ahead and getting that movie announced, that would be great. That'd be great.
John Wick is a 2014 American neo-noir action thriller film directed by Chad Stahelski and David Leitch and starring Keanu Reeves, Michael Nyqvist, Alfie Allen, Adrienne Palicki, Bridget Moynihan, Dean Winters, Ian McShane, John Leguizamo, and Willem Dafoe. The film stars Reeves as John Wick, a retired hitman, seeking vengeance for the theft of his vintage car and the killing of his puppy, a gift from his recently deceased wife.
I think I pronounced names better than you do. William Dafoe. That's William Dafoe, ladies and gentlemen. John Wick, sorry, number one, chapter one. I guess it could still be called just John Wick. But, Robert, your thoughts on John Wick 1?
I absolutely love John Wick 1. I'm thinking, okay, Keanu Reeves. I mean, he's got the whole Matrix thing hanging over his head, so... Any movie that comes out with after that, it's got to live up to that, right? Because it's like The Matrix was so amazing.
Yes.
This one didn't do anything like what The Matrix did. No. And that's why it was so good, because it was the realism, like, blew you away.
Yes.
So you're just like, yeah, I mean, I think that was the only way to actually do it. You couldn't do more of The Matrix, that type of a thing. You had to do something, you know, realistic to really, you know, stand up to the fantasy that you get from The Matrix.
And the realism is something I enjoy a lot in these movies. I told you before, like, how one of the things I love so much about these movies is, you know, how you have the hero or the good guy or the bad guy. They're holding the gun with one arm and they're just shooting all willy-nilly. This guy has it locked in tight, gripped well, and, like, he's checking sights. He's doing everything you should do while shooting that weapon, and almost makes a art for, like, a equilibrium style,
almost, yeah,
art form out of it, martial arts form out of it. And yeah, I'm on the same boat as Robert. I think this movie is absolutely amazing. Keanu, even now, I think maybe with this one, we'll see what happens after this weekend, opening weekend, but he has this stigma of people. There are people who love Keanu Reeves. There's people who thinks he can't act. I think he has a role he fits. Like, he can't just kind of be in any movie, in my opinion, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think that's fine. I think the roles that he's in, he acts well, extremely well. He's left that surfer mentality. They've realized, I think, he doesn't do huge monologues. I'll say that before I put my foot in my mouth. He works very well with the one or two sentences or the one-liners, and they work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But in John Wick, I think he's found his niche. Like, this for me is amazing. Like, the first one especially, we get introduced to this hitman, assassin, and should we be glorifying John Wick so much? Because he is a bad guy.
He's a bad guy, but I think, I mean, the first movie, the main point was that he had left the life behind. He gave it all up for a woman, you know, the woman he loved, and then she got sick and died, so he's grieving from that. You don't even know he's a hitman at first, you just know he's a grieving man. So,
yes.
For me, that was one of the more important parts of the first movie, was that he was leaving the life behind, and then he was grieving for his wife. That it wasn't even his fault that he got brought back into it. I mean,
yeah, he wanted to end it.
And that was kind of also, in a weird sort of way, his way of grieving was going back into the life, because he said they took away his ability to mourn with somebody else, so he had to mourn alone.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people rag on this movie, because he did it all for a puppy. But exactly what you just said, like, that puppy represented how he was going to mourn and get past this incident. Because his wife, in the first movie, it's like 2 days, 3 days after she's dead that mm-hmm. this happens. These yep. idiot guy, punk kids, you know, come in and steal his car and kill his dog. That he just got, the last thing his dead wife did was, I'm assuming the last thing,
mm-hmm.
Was apparently put out for a puppy to be delivered, knowing that she was going to die, delivered to her husband, her widowed husband. Widower? Anyway, her husband. And she left a note, a sweet note, saying, this is yours. And yeah, they killed a puppy. I get it. Big deal. But you add that to this, this dude has all right to go mm-hmm. nuts. Not to mention, as we quickly find out, he, as Robert said, he didn't even know that he was an assassin, a hitman, until he's left lying on the floor holding his dead puppy. And
who had crawled across the floor and left us like a trail of blood
just to die
to him, just to die to get close to him. Yeah,
heart wrenching stuff.
It's, I know, it's good stuff. Not just an action movie, there's some stuff in there.
And that's what I love about this movie. Like, on the surface, there's this hitman revenge tale, you know, pulling out of love and that sort of thing. But then you have this understory of these hitmen have a code, and they have this whole network set up that is its story in itself. Like, you could literally branch out and go to other hitmen's lives, and or just even the hotel, but we're jumping ahead. So these punk kids see him pull up with a car, and they love the car because it's like a 69 Mustang custom job, just amazing looking car. And he, in my opinion, doesn't even do anything out of line. Like, the guy doesn't realize, the punk kids speak Russian. So I don't even know the line the kid says. Something about
everything. Everything has its price. Something like that. And he's like, no, not this.
That was his reply. And this kid took it so far, in fact. This spoiled little punk Russian kid. No offense to Russian, but that's what he was in the movie. And he goes to breaks into this guy's house, steal the car. They beat him. I guess they were assumed to an inch of his life, and then killed his dog and just left him there for dead. But then we find out, oh boy, this isn't your average everyday person. Old John Leguizamo makes an appearance, who's come a long way since his days as The Pest. He is a great actor now. I don't know if you ever saw The Pest, but it's like never mind. I won't even bring that movie. But anyway, he's in this movie a grudge. Like, I guess he's where like people
He's like a chop shop owner, basically.
Yeah. And he works with the Russians, so of course they go to him. They want fresh plates, new VIN numbers, that sort of thing. And he notices the car right off the bat, and he just gets ticked off, hits the kid, tell him, you don't know what you've done. And the kid, we find out, is the son of a big Russian mob boss. Not mob boss. Big Russian boss of some kind. And he is furious now because he found out this guy, this chop shop owner who works for him, hit his son. So he calls him, why did you hit my son? And John Leguizamo says he stole John Wick's car. And one of my favorite lines of the movie, the only reply is, oh. And he hangs up the phone. I loved it. I love that. That's it, yeah. But you mentioned John Wick's name, and it sends a chill down everyone who knows his name's spine, because he, as we find out, is this amazing BA assassin killer, the boogeyman. Mm-hmm. And the Russian even describes him, he's the guy you send to kill the boogeyman, which I thought was an amazing way to describe him. John Leguizamo doesn't have much good. Yeah, he's just kind of connect the dots kind of guy in this movie. But John, he pulls himself up, and he goes. I don't know why, but did you find out that he cemented over his stuff? Or was that his way of burying his past?
I think that was his way of burying his past. And he didn't want anybody to find it. You're not going to find it if somebody cements over it.
Yeah.
He was trying to lock it away. But makes sense to me.
Yeah, so he, down in his basement, he's cemented over a trunk full of all his assassin stuff. These odd gold coins and all of his guns and everything. And he checks into the hotel. Well, actually, the Russian guy tries to get him before he comes to it, because I guess he knows John is going to come for him. He tries to parlay, doesn't he?
He tries.
He calls John.
But he doesn't say anything. He just hangs up the phone on him. So he's like, yeah, okay, I'm going to send these guys and try to kill him.
Mm-hmm. And John takes them out in good fashion. And I love John's relationship with everyone. Everyone knows him. Jimmy, the cop, comes to the door after John dispatches of the Russians easily. And so, John, you back to work? Working through it. I think it's his line or something. Like, oh, yeah, having some issues or work. Yeah, but anyway. But, yeah. John proceeds to check into the hotel, which... I just biked on the name of the hotel.
Continental,
thank you. The Continental, which actually is a famous hotel, has huge history in New York with, I think, the gay and lesbian community. There's a cool documentary by Malcolm Ingram on it. But in this story, it serves as the cover for this League of Assassins, I guess?
I guess you can go with that, yeah.
And they pay everything with these gold coins. They have the Continental is neutral ground. There's no violence done in it. And so I guess assassins go there when they need to be away from their loved ones or their home, and when they're on the job and they get the job done. And I just love that aspect of it. And I want to know so much more about it. We get a little bit more in the second one, but that whole aspect for me is pretty cool. And we get Ian McShane. I don't know if you ever asked you if you watched Deadwood before. Yeah, he is the main antagonist in Deadwood, and he is fantastic. He's Winston in this, I believe his name is. But yeah, he is this proper British dude who is the manager of the Continental in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I just love him. He's one of my favorites in this movie. Do you have a character that stood out to you other than Wick?
Other than Wick in the first one?
Yeah.
I would say it was the guy at the hotel at the front desk. I thought he was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he seems to be like the guy who's in the know of everything. Mm-hmm. He'll get you where you need to go if you walk in there. I like the Russian mob boss, because we see him kind of go from a 10 to a 0 throughout this movie. Because when he finds out his son screwed over Wick, he comes downstairs and just punches his son right in the gut. And yeah, and then, you know, he's showing his dominance, and he's in control, he's in full authority. And the lawyer is the guy from Oz and the insurance commercials. Well, he's always getting hurt. I can't think of his name right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a lawyer, but it's the Russian right-hand man. So this Russian guy is... I think he's my most interesting character, other than John, of course, because... where was I going with that? I was going somewhere with that. I forget. Anyway... John goes on a rampage, and it's in one of the better rampages I've seen, because he, described earlier, the way they handle action in these movies, they're using the gun, and Miles is on fire. See, he should have progressed in that freaking tournament. Avatar's on TV, sorry. But, they use the shooting in John Wick 1 is like, and 2. It's like a martial arts form. He is double tapping people. He's getting them in the head. He's anticipating every move.
He usually goes body first, and then he goes head to finish him.
Yep.
You know, it's just like a pattern with almost everybody. But he's really good at anticipating where the people are going to be before they're behind the wall. He kind of like either hears or knows, or if their foot peeks out from around a corner, he shoots them in the foot so they lean forward so he can shoot them in the head. I mean, it's ridiculous how
accurate and
accurate everything is. And it's just like almost like a stiff dance. It's just, mm-hmm. There's no fluidity to it. It's just like, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it's impressive.
And if they get too close to where guns are involved, then he goes into his judo. He's throwing them on the ground. He's leg locking their heads, their arms. Does a lot of arm breaking, kind of Steve Zagalish in that.
Another thing I liked about like the hand-to-hand combat, he wasn't overwhelmingly the winner in every one of those matches. He had to struggle. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just like, boom, you gave it to him. He was just like, invincible. he actually got the, you know, crap beat out of him during these fights, but he always walked out of it. So that was nice.
And he gets wounded. Here's where I was going with the Russian crime boss. His right-hand man, like, not the insurance guy, but his, like, the head of his guard, like, he's intelligent. Like, he, like, when John goes to the nightclub and tries to get the Russian son, this guy puts things together and goes and finds John and actually puts up a heck of a fight against John. Like, he stabs him with a beer bottle, throws him off a ledge, you know. And then later on, this guy, everyone's trying to shoot John and failing. This guy gets in a car and rams John, you know, with his car. And we're skipping over William Dafoe. We cannot do that.
Yes, we did.
William Dafoe is, we see him at John Wick's wife's funeral. And we are, I guess, led to believe that they're close friends. And then when all the poop hits the fan, the Russian goes to William Dafoe and says, $2 million, I think, was the price on Wick's head. And he tells him it's an open contract and he wants him to go do it. And the guy says, done. And you kind of have to scratch your head at first. But we later find out, and in my opinion, John wouldn't have survived the first movie if it wasn't for William Dafoe. He saves his life.
I thought that was the whole point, in a way. Like, everyone thought John Wick was invincible, but he really wasn't invincible. He had somebody kind of looking out for him to take those shots when he had to, when he was, like, you know, overwhelmed. But it just made him appear to be, like, more, you know, than he actually was, which they didn't really do in the second movie.
Yeah.
But I kind of liked that he wasn't, you know, invincible, and that, like, he always had to struggle with the fights. And then he did get into some trouble, but he had somebody looking out for him.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, made it even more real than just him being invincible.
Yes, I agree. So the chick who wanted to kill him in the Continental, just a death wish or just new to the game?
I think she wanted to make her name or something.
By killing
Wick? They already knew each other.
Yeah.
Wick had been gone for years.
So
he just came back. So she wasn't new, but I guess she was just hungry or
money, yeah.
Or whatever.
Because they doubled it if you were willing to break the rules of the Continental, which one of the rules, I think, did I say already, is no violence inside the Continental. And this chick is willing to break those rules for $4 million and just deal with the consequences, which we find out is a no-no. Right. So there are a couple scenes, well, one in particular, where they have a chance to kill Wick and they don't. And it's just that Robert brought this up when we were watching it. It's that normal villain has to talk. Like, because, like I described, the head of his guard hits Wick with the car. Wick goes down and is about to black out. And they have right there, they can pop him in the face. But nope, they take him to an abandoned church or something. And the villain has to give his whole speech. And I guess they still at that point could have killed Wick if it wasn't for William Dafoe's character. But if they would have just shot him right then and there, would have been over, movie done, I guess. But still, we're just pointing out bad villains since that's an ongoing thing for our show. I liked the way Dafoe went out, but I wish he would have. I wish more of a fight, I guess. Like,
you want to kill more of them?
Yeah. I guess they had to show how powerful the Continental was with her death, but I wish he would have killed her. But so she betrays, or not betrays, but joins up with the Russian full time, I guess. And the Russian gives up his son, which I think is what sent him over the edge. Wick finds him and threatens him, and he, in exchange for his life, cancels the contract on Wick's life and gives up the location of his son. And then he just lights a joint and sits there while his son is being murdered at the facility where he's supposed to be hidden. But then we soon find out this guy simply flipped the loop and goes after a hitman that he hired, William Dafoe's character. And here's the thing that ticks me off. Like, this whole, and it's the only thing in the movie I hate. She sees Wick going into William Dafoe's house because they just caught him and said, we just murdered him. Mm-hmm. Why didn't she just put one in his head right there? Because then she gets a phone call and it's the Continental saying, I'm sorry to be calling you that this late, but... And the next thing we see her, which is cool, Ian McShane's character is meeting her and he just kind of just walks in and says, you broke the rules, and walks right by her. Four men come out. All four of them shoot her simultaneously in the head, showing you that you do not break the rules of the Continental, which I want to watch a TV show based on.
That would be awesome.
But, yeah, that's...
I think maybe she didn't take the shot because she's just not that good of a shot. I don't know. That was kind of a long distance, maybe.
Did you get an idea while he... Because when she broke in his room and tried to kill him, did you get an idea that he doesn't really want to hurt women?
I didn't get that. Well...
Because, like, he wasn't punching her until, like, he covered her face and justified, I can't see her face, I don't know if someone didn't punch her.
I see a little bit of that, but eventually he did have to do what he had to do, the same way in the second movie. Mm-hmm. Eventually he did have to do what he had to do, so... I think, I don't know, I think he kind of saw her as basically an equal, like an equal assassin, so...
Because I kind of got the feeling that he not only did not want to hit women... But maybe they saw women as weaker because it only took one punch to lay her out.
Right. Well, that's, yeah, but in the second one, they rectified that issue if there was one because there was multiple women that attacked him.
Okay.
That he didn't go easy on them. Like the lady that was playing the violin. Hate to jump ahead, but just to
true,
say.
True. Okay.
There's women in the second one where there's that issue. But I do see where you're coming from.
But in the end, the Russian completely goes crazy, and the part I love where he goes to zero from 10 to zero, they're in his car and they think they've gotten rid of Wick, and goes up behind him and he just starts laughing like, just
he knows it's coming.
What's up?
He knows it's
coming. He knows the inevitable is about to happen, and he knows he can't get out of it. He knows he can't beat this, so he just cracks up and is laughing, and while his men are dying all around him, and then his right hand man asks for a gun. He's just playing with them. He's like, here, good luck. They have this running gag where his right hand man doesn't speak Russian, but he keeps speaking Russian at him, and he does it one more time. He's like, I don't speak Russian. And he's like, good luck. And he gets out of the car, and he's so happy that he fires a gun.
He fires and hits the car. He kind of smiles and does
like
that.
He smiles and looks at his gun like, yeah, justified. And of course, he could have survived, but then the Russian boss smashes him over. Yeah. But needless to say, it ends in a nice fist fight with Wick and the boss. Did you feel that was
necessary?
Yeah.
Well, for Wick, not necessarily, because he had the tendency to just walk up and shoot you in the head really quick, and it's over. But I don't know why in that particular moment he decided to go hand-in-hand with him. I thought the fight lasted a little longer than I thought it would have. I didn't think the Russian boss was going to...
See, I thought the fight should have lasted or gone better, because throughout the movie they're showing that this Russian boss can throw a punch. Like, he's one hitting his son, or that's just showing how weak his son was. And then with the Dafoe scene, he's constantly punching, you know.
Well, it's easy to punch somebody when you're the boss. Nobody's going to punch you back.
Truth. But then they finally get someone who, yeah, okay. But, yeah, Wick stabs him in not a vital organ, but he still dies.
Yeah, he just kind of gets him there. Right? Yeah. Just, like, on the shoulders, so, kind of. Yeah. Well, I guess it was, I don't know where that actually pierced into. I don't think that went to his lung. That wasn't deep enough.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah.
I don't think that was a vital blow, but
he dies. And then as this movie ended, Robert asked a question. He got vengeance on everyone for stealing his car and dude, where's his car? Because he got vengeance on them for stealing his car and killing the dog, but we don't know what happened to the car. And we'll end our discussion on part one at that.
That's pretty sad, though, that I was worried about the car. It's like a dead puppy.
It made sense, though, because, you know, he was worried about that car. That car was, you know, but yeah.
the wife does mention it in the letter, I think, at the beginning. She's like, something about his car.
Yeah, because she's like, this puppy is so you can actually care about something. Care about a thing, a living thing. Not I don't mean the car. Yeah, something like that.
I would like to add one small thing, my favorite line out of the movie, which is just ridiculous, because he's tied to a chair, and he's yelling at the mob boss. It's like, give me your son, or you can die screaming beside him.
Yeah.
I just thought that was just the perfect line in that situation.
Because he, at that point, seemingly had no way out.
Yeah.
Two guys holding him down, about to put a plastic bag over his head, and yeah, that was a good one. But yeah, that's John Wick. Maybe we'll in the future be known as John Wick Chapter 1, but right now it's John Wick. And with that said, we'll get to some Potter and Family promos.
This week on the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast.
Well, that's pretty good. So all of your films are 3 stars and above.
Yeah, but as we've spoken about in previous episodes, a 75 movie can appear above an 85 movie for me, because although I think the movie is better and has a better rating, I like it more than the other one. It's not linear like your damn head, okay? That is completely valid.
Makes no sense.
Makes total sense. Anyone else out there who thinks in colors rather than numbers will understand.
Yeah, well,
understand.
What color is the sky in your world?
Oh, f***ing sake, it's purple.
Coming up this week on Now That I'm Older.
Everybody, as soon as I said my mom's here, all of us were suddenly 12-year-old kids. Like,
yeah, because we're like 18, 19. We're exactly. Not old enough to have any kind of confidence.
I had no idea that you were physically and psychologically abusing my child.
Not abusing, conditioning.
Yeah, there's a fine line there, buddy. You got there right after the hot girl took her top off or some like that. Like,
what? Well, that kind of never happens to me. I'm very lucky.
So check us out this Thursday at NowThatI'mOlder.com and anywhere you can find great podcasts, and find us on Twitter at NTIOPod. Thanks a lot.
And we're back, and we'll go to my favorite segment, trailers. I'll go first.
Alrighty.
I think I've mentioned this trailer before, but it's a trailer for this movie before, but it has a new trailer out. Pirates of the Caribbean 5. During the Super Bowl last Sunday, they put out a new trailer, which showed more. Showed Jack, showed our Orlando Bloom's character, who took the place of Davy Jones in the other movies. Needless to say, everyone hates, I think, the fact that there is a Pirates 5. I'm happy that there is one. What about you, sir?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that particular movie. But my trailer is The Dinner. Mm-hmm. And basically what this one's about, I was a little confused when I first saw it. I didn't know what I was watching. It's like I guess their parents, a little bit older, get together for dinner at this nice restaurant because they need to discuss something. But it doesn't really reveal it until later on in the trailer. You don't know what's going on. And I guess this is based off of a book that did really well. I'd never read the book. But apparently they're discussing, you don't find this out till later, they're discussing something that their sons did that was a horrible crime, but they got away with it, but everybody knows about it in the family, and they're trying to decide whether or not to turn them in or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a weird kind of plot to me. And I haven't heard that storyline before. I don't know if you have.
I haven't.
So it's different and it sounds interesting to me. That's my pick for this week.
Is this a new one coming out?
This is a new one coming out. It's got Richard Gere.
Okay.
So yeah, it's The Dinner.
Awesome. And not Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
No.
All right. And that will bring us to John Wick Chapter 2, Watchbot, if you wouldn't mind.
John Wick Chapter 2 is a 2017 American neo-noir action thriller film directed by Chad Stahelski and written by Derek Kolsted. A sequel to the 2014 film John Wick, the plot follows hitman John Wick, who goes on the run after a bounty is placed on his head. It stars Keanu Reeves, Common, Lawrence Fishburne, Ricardo Scamarcio, Ruby Rose, John Leguizamo, and Ian McShane, and marks the first collaboration between Reeves and Fishburne since appearing together in the Matrix trilogy.
Ooh. Nice. Thank you, WatchBot. That was well done. Better than I could have, probably. John Wick, Chapter 2. Now, I went into this. I didn't think it would surpass my love for the first.
Right.
But it did.
Did it?
It did. Your thoughts?
It for me, it did not surpass my love for the first one. I still think the first one is the better of the two. I think they took the first one and they gave it a little crack and then they turned it into the second one. But without the heartfelt story that makes the first one so good for me.
Gotcha. So did you dislike this
one? No, not at all. Okay. I loved it. But it just didn't surpass the first one.
Gotcha. This one surpassed the first one for me because I got more of that Hotel Continental backstory that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Not as much as I want, because I think it could still go further, but you definitely get a closer inside look of this. And this one started with answering Robert's question.
Dude, where's my car?
We find out that the Russian mob boss's brother in part one, has John Wick's car, and they're about to chop it, I guess.
I'm not sure what they're doing with it. It was in their inventory, they said. Yeah. First, but this is my point. If you know you have John Wick, okay. I'd get rid of it.
Yes.
Because it's John Wick's car.
Parking in front of his house. With the note saying sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Some roses or something. But yeah. Like, why would you keep it?
I love this opening, though. We start with the motorcycle car chase. We don't see John, but he's in a car chasing down a dude on the motorcycle. And that impact on that motorcycle, my goodness. Like, some of these scenes, like, I know CG's a thing. I get it. Don't write me saying, no CG. But it looked painful, is all I'm saying. And then we get the whole John Wick dialogue, which I can see how you kind of say some things are recycled. But yeah, John Wick dialogue of how he's so super focused and he works on sure will. And right as he says that, John Wick, we get the first glimpse of Keanu, half shadowed, half not. But here's my thing with this one. Were they shipping out? Were they just leaving, packing up and running? Was that the plan in that whole scene?
I don't think so. I think they're just doing business as usual. Just waiting for whatever inevitable thing is going to happen.
Because the Russian's right-hand man came in and he's like, isn't this a little extreme? This is one guy. Who is this guy? He's like, it's John Wick. And they do the whole, it's not, you know. But like, it seemed like they were just getting everything out of all of their...
I don't know what was going on. There was like a bunch of taxi cabs. That's all I remember.
Taxi cabs coming in with like hidden compartments full of dope and those gold coins and things like that.
Yeah, I'm not for sure what was going on. So I have to rewatch that.
Yeah, so... and then later on, there's a scene with Ian McShane and looked like somebody I knew, but
somebody you know.
They're on the roof of the Continental, and they're once again mentioned the coins and how good they are. I didn't know if that.
I guess that was a guy who designed and made the coins.
I didn't know if that was supposed to be something. Anyway.
But I did like in the very beginning, the opening scene, the guy was describing, like you said, he was giving that same old speech about how focused and whatever.
Yeah.
And how he killed three guys with a pencil.
Oh, yes.
I loved how they mentioned that because it comes up later in the movie.
In part one, they mention one of the things why John Wick is so feared. Thank you for bringing that up, Robert. Because in a bar, he apparently, supposedly killed three guys with a pencil. And everyone is just blown away. Man, can you believe it? Yeah. And they emphasize that again in this one after telling that story. And he's like, he killed three, and a guy cuts him off. I know, three guys in the bar with a pencil. It's like, yeah, with a pencil. He can use anything, you know. And that's what, yeah. But Wick gets his car back, kind of.
Made me so mad. Because I really wanted that car to survive more so than I wanted the puppy to.
And the first one. Yeah.
It's like, why couldn't the car survive? And I understand why he did what he did, but man, I would have got that car out of there. And then,
I think he was trying to, but once they hit it, he's like, screw it. Yeah. And he basically turns his car. It was a destruction derby for like 5 minutes. Car is running into his car and then into people and then into him. And then it's a very, very cool scene.
He still got his car out of there, though.
He got his car out of there.
He drove it home.
Barely. It died probably right as he pulled it into the driveway. And we get reintroduced into the John Leguizamo character. Watchbot did a good description of this movie, so I won't go into that. But, yeah, he... Well, I guess there is more in there. There's the detail of the mark. So... John Wick gets his car back. He peace with the Russians and knock at the door right as he reburies his stuff in the basement. And it's this Italian?
I think it's Italian. I hate to be wrong, but yeah, pretty sure it's Italian.
And apparently he is the reason John has gotten out, which we still don't know full details. Apparently John was assigned an impossible task. To get out of the assassin game and be left alone. And this is the guy who helped him do that. And he jumped, and I guess in the assassin world, there is a thing called a mark. There's a kind of a medallion that opens up. You prick your finger and the blood leaves a blood fingerprint there. It's double-sided, so you can do one when you make the promise and one when it's complete. And this guy is the one who helps John get out of the game, and now he's come to collect. And John says, he pleads with him, no, I don't want to do this. Please don't ask me this. And the guy asks him anyway. And then we find out now a little bit more of, well, after the guy blows up John Wick's house because John refused him, we find out that this guy wants John to kill his sister. And this is important because the table of 12, the high table, which is, I guess, the people over the entire League of Assassins or Assassin Guild or whatever you want to call it. Not Assassin's Creed, not that movie. But they're over all of that. And his sister sits on that table. Their dad willed it to her as opposed to him. He's jealous. He wants to be on that table. And so he orders John to go after her and kill her. And he can't do it himself because he loves her.
Which didn't make any sense, but okay.
Any sense at all. And then John doesn't answer, just gets up and goes. And we meet Cummin, who I love in this movie. I don't know about you.
Don't you feel like he plays kind of like a similar role in every movie where he has a gun?
Yep. He does.
You kind of typecasted as that dude. Which I did not say he didn't do a good job. Yeah. It's just, sure.
He was in Hell on Wheels, another Western show that I think AMC did. Mm. I like that show a lot, and he did a great job in that. But yeah, you're right. Like Smoking Aces, other movie, he gets a gun. He's that same role. But I liked his drive in this one and his ability, I guess, that he showed off in this one. He is the protector of Santonio's sister.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure. Is it Santonio? Did I do good?
Close enough.
Okay. But yeah, he's the protector of his sister, and
I guess he's more than that because he's like he said, she's my ward, but also somebody dear to me. So.
And she kind of looked him all up and down. And when
what would I do without you?
What would I do without you?
That's what I'm talking about.
But yeah. Oh, I'm skipping over something. Ruby Rose.
Yes.
Oh, Ruby. Ruby
Rose. Tell us about Ruby Rose, because you have
a relationship with Ruby. I first saw in...
Is Ruby Rose a real name?
Is her real name, yeah. Maybe her entertainment name.
Okay.
But that's the one that is out everywhere. Orange is the New Black is the first time I saw her. And I was like, whoa, who's that? She is smoking. And apparently she's like been a DJ, a graffiti artist. She's done a lot of stuff. And she got into acting. I think Orange is the New, I could be wrong here. Orange is the New Black was her big breakout role. Now she's popping this. She's in XXX. She's all over the place in some other TV shows. She wants to be a superhero. I think I saw on an interview with her and Jimmy Kimmel.
She's got lots of tattoos.
Are you looking at her?
Yep.
But she is gorgeous. And then she has that Australian accent. Melt my heart. Be still my beating heart. Anyway, in this movie, we don't get to hear that voice, but she plays a mute person who can't speak. And she does sign language. And she's Santone. She's that guy's right-hand girl who gets the job done. But not good. Not well. She's not good at her job.
She's good at standing there silently looking weird.
Yep.
But it worked.
It worked.
It just, I like that part. It's weird, like these, like that's a unique character. I'm going to a different movie. I'm thinking of The Raid. There's like in The Raid 2, there's like the baseball guy and the hammer girl.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see all these oddball assassin type unique characters get together in one movie. That would just be a mind-blowing experience.
Even Coffin's character, like I want to see his backstory because he's apparently this, like Santonio's sister chose the right-hand person because he kicked John Wick's butt, even though Wick had been, I guess, shot up a bunch of times and that sort of thing. Another thing that we skipped over, this movie shows, like, they take the time, instead of a montage of, I'm getting pumped up to go do this, they take the time to show he's putting on a bulletproof vest. Or, in part two's case, there's some new Kevlar that can be stitched into a suit. It will stop a bullet. But it will hurt like the dick.
Let's talk about that for a second. Okay. What did you think about that? Because there's a lot of scenes where you see him using it, where he like whips his like a coat cape. Up like a cape,
yeah,
like Batman would. So now I know what was in Batman's cape and why he was doing that all the time. Because he had some bulletproof stuff inside his cape.
Yeah, he was trying to defend his face, I guess, is what they were getting at.
You think that was a little too far from realism? So. Because the whole point of the first one was so realistic, which is what I liked about it. This one kind of took it a little bit
that
past
Kevlar's
that.
That Kevlar is real.
Kevlar is real?
Yes.
Like that particular type of one?
Yeah. That Kevlar is real, but you would be a fool to wear it because I don't think your average person with that thin of Kevlar could take a bullet and keep going. It will stop you from going in your skin or bruising.
Like getting kicked by a donkey?
Yeah. You'd be out for a bit, I think. But I guess that's why he's the boogeyman.
Yeah, that's possible.
But yeah, you're right. It did pull it away the way he's using it, like Batman's cape, and he's covering his face as people use machine guns and shoot at him. Yeah, you're right. That does pull you out of it a bit because the realism in this is what makes these movies so good. And there was a lot of brain matter in this movie.
There was a lot of particulates.
Yeah. He's shooting people close range in the face, and
there's one scene that bothered me because he had a guy in some kind of a weird judo hold lock with his leg,
mm-hmm.
and his foot was right behind the guy's head.
Yep.
He shot through the guy's head, but he missed his own foot,
mm-hmm.
which I don't think. I think he would have hit his foot.
I think so too. Was it in part one or part two?
That was two.
Where the guy he shoves a knife in the guy's. Off the guy's mouth and just watches as the guy dies. Wow, this scene. Like, I get it. He's an assassin who is used to killing people, and I don't know if he was holding it there and watching this guy's eyes just to make sure he was dead, but he stabs a guy right up the chin through the brain, I guess, and
just gazes into his eyes.
Just looks at his eyes as the guy slumps to the ground. A good 5 seconds of this, and then he gets up and walks away and continues to kick butt. Yeah, just that's weird. Just want to see that twinkle go away, I guess. But yeah, John goes, and I love the part where it kind of a throwback to Defoe, I guess, where the his target is like, I've lived my life my way and I will die my way. Mm-hmm. So she slits her own wrists as opposed to letting John. She gets naked first, which I don't know.
You know, it's a movie naked though. You know, I ever seen?
Yeah, you don't
it's
see.
Like
it,
it's
yeah.
a movie naked.
It's the yeah. We didn't get an R rating.
It's the perfect. My arm's right where it needs to be, so you don't see anything.
And as it pans down, it stops right above the cheeks. So you, but yeah, she gets naked and slits her own wrists and does this. I guess it's supposed to be beautiful death in the bathtub. In these catacombs, which they do have raves down there, but I didn't expect her to have an office in like these Roman catacombs.
Right.
That's the scene I'm skipping. There is a Roman continental. I guess there are probably continentals in every city to accommodate these assassins. But the manager, Ian McShane, he's another actor. He pulls John aside as John checks in and he's like, I just have one question. He removes one question. You're not here to kill the Pope, are you? John's like, no. So then he says, okay, then you can have a room here. So I guess the Pope is off limits to assassins. But, yeah. So what did you think about the catacombs scene? Like,
With the killing?
After he kills her, his escape.
The escape was pretty amazing. I like how he set up all the guns where they need to be. Like, he knew where he was going to have to go to get out of there and the fight that he was expecting, I guess. I thought Ruby Rose's character, I don't think she shined at that point.
No.
She doesn't really shine until towards the end.
Does she ever really shine?
And a little bit towards the end. Okay. She does make a noble sacrifice where she's like, go ahead, I'll handle this.
Yeah.
But that's basically it.
Okay.
And when she's in the Continental, at the Rome Continental, after he has a drink with
Common.
Yeah. She's just like, you notice her in the background. I don't know if you noticed her in the background. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you did.
Just sitting there smiling.
Just sitting there, and you're just like, oh my God, it's her. And she's just sitting there, just as nice, just waiting patiently.
Waiting her turn. I like the whole setup. See, I like when right after he killed her, he tries to avoid Common's gaze, but Common sees him, and Common's like, you working? It's like, I'm afraid so. Is it going well? Yeah, and they instantly draw down on each other, and I guess they're both wearing those Kevlar suits because they shoot each other straight up the chest. The one time they miss a face, but yeah. And then they gets away and goes through this incredible scene where he murders a lot of people. It's in self defense, but like I'm talking. There's a henchman factory that's going out of business because he killed every one of them. He just got faces and fists galore, but yeah. Common then meets up with him. That scene with Common and him when he gets back to New York and they both have silenced pistols, which I'm realizing in this movie, yeah, in these movies, the general public doesn't seem to care about people dying around them. Because in part one, they were in a party, and he's, like, killing people amidst the crowd. Like, yeah! Woo! To you dancing. Then it kind of disperse in
towards
part
the
two.
End,
but, yeah. But there's a scene where Common gets to America, and has followed Wiki, and he's trying to kill him. And they have this nice little fight scene. And they're walking through a crowd heading to the subway. They both have silencers and they're just taking a little pot shot at it. Both missing, but yeah, it's a cool scene. And then they fight on a subway, which I thought was cool. What do you think of Cummins' death?
Cummins, he didn't. Did he technically
well,
die?
We don't,
you don't
see
know
him.
If he dies.
We don't see him die.
He might still be alive.
Yes.
We told him to pull him
because
out.
Because they foreshadowed that he might still be alive with Fishburne's character. Mm. Because Fishburne is like, you gave me a choice. Yeah, you know, yep. I could leave the pressure here.
I think it's still alive.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did like that scene. I liked the fight. I mean, there was nothing spectacular about it, but it ended really, really well. It
reminded me of Collateral.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what do you think of Fishburne?
Fishburne's character was a little weird. He seemed a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like he had gone nuts, but at the same time, I mean.
Toppins. Feed the birds.
Yeah, he was a little weird, but I mean, I guess that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, his character.
Their conversation, and I don't know if it's just because that's Keanu Reeves, but. Like
it's mainly all Fishburne talking.
It was Matrix. Yeah. It's so Matrix like. I was like, you know, you're gonna need my help before, you know, because I don't know that whole. Yeah, it was all Fishburne talking and Keanu being Keanu. What? Yeah. Oh. I understand. Yeah, but which isn't fair because that's the Wick character, I guess, but. I think Fishburne's whole setup was cool too. Like he essentially has a league of assassins of his own that are all posing as homeless people to keep him in the loop of knowing where everyone is. I guess that little map in there was signifying.
Yep.
But yeah, so yeah, he's his setup is cool. He's put on a little weight too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Matrix did good for him.
He's eating good. But
sorry about his daughter. Man.
Did she? Oh, the porn.
Oops.
Yeah.
Can't save them all, folks.
You can't save them all. When porn calls, it calls, I guess. But yeah, the Wick really need help to find. This guy who's always in the museum?
Probably not, but he probably needed help to get there.
Yeah.
Because it was an underground deal.
We skipped over that. This guy puts a $7 million bounty on John, and everywhere John goes.
There's a lot of assassins in New York.
Yeah.
Because, like, everybody's phone is ringing.
People are checking their phones left and right, and as soon as he sets foot back in New York, everybody's trying to kill him. And he's, just having bob and weave. So I guess that's where Fishburne comes into play. His underground league of homeless assassins can get Wick where he needs to go.
Obviously, Fishburne's character wasn't really worried about money because he got $7 million right there, but he wasn't really caring about it.
Yeah, he didn't care. He's like, dude, does it look like I need help? They sneak Wick to the museum where this guy always was. And I didn't like the carnival mirror room scene very much, but that's where Ruby Rose did the big one. You think she shined there, though?
More so than she did the rest of the movie. I liked her character, despite the fact that she wasn't as BA as John Wick. But I think that was her moment right there, is when she sacrificed herself for her boss. But yeah, and it wasn't a bad. I mean, she held her own. I mean, she is tiny compared to.
Yeah.
I mean, Keanu Reeves isn't a massive man, but
he's still, like 6 foot something.
He's not huge, but
he's not huge. Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't like going up against the Rock. But exactly, still, it was like she held her own. She got some punches in there. And, yeah.
This is where like it hit me that it's like I'm rooting for a cold-blooded killer. Because as she's dying, she signs, "I'll be seeing you," and he just is like, "Sure," you know. I'm like, "Wait a minute, this guy's an assassin. Why am I liking him?" But you can't help it, because like,
he's an anti-hero.
Yeah. And the shocker, did this catch you off guard? The ending where he goes in there and
No, I figured that's what was going to happen. He was going to shoot him.
Did you see the aftermath of that coming? I didn't.
I knew that he was, I mean, according to the rules, that he had to be killed.
Yes.
But I figured something was going to happen. I just didn't know what. I like how the end was like, I'll give you an hour.
Yeah.
And he just starts running.
So Wick goes to the Continental, New York, and Centuria Machingo is in there. And it's a safe haven. You cannot draw blood in there. You're not supposed to anyway. Wick comes in and there's the manager, Ian McShane's character. Wick goes down in there and this guy's giving a speech. He's kind of rubbing it in John's face. Not sure what he was trying to push for. if maybe he was wanted trying to kill him because he.
I don't think he did. I think he was just being a jerk.
Being an a-hole. Like, oh, I can't get me. But John doesn't take it. John shoots him and leaves. Goes home to his burnt down house, and then Ian, or the maitre d', whatever. Yeah, he comes and gets John because, as we saw in the first movie, you break the rules of the Continental, you get killed. But Ian McShane gives him a hour head start. They said they doubled the bounty on his head, which was $7 million, so it takes up to $14 million. And we end the movie with everyone getting those text messages. John Wick has an hour, and then he's excommunicate. And with him running for his life with his dog, and he should have left that dog with the maitre d', because but yeah, seemingly there will be a third, and I'm sure there will be, because this one is already doing amazingly well in theaters. So
yeah, I look forward to seeing the third one,
because now he was told straight up he no longer has the protection of the Continental. Everyone wants to kill him. He has killed two members of the Table of 12, or the High Table, whatever it was called. Now Wick is on his own. Wick is lit.
Runs good.
He gives his speech, though, at the end. He's like, "You tell anyone, you send anyone who comes after me, that I will kill them all." And yeah, Ming says, "Of course you will." So yeah, John Wick Chapter 2, ladies and gentlemen. Wick is lit.
Wick is lit.
And my fingers are burning. I'm putting it out. Yeah, that's the movie segment today. We are back on track for suggestions now. You want to go first?
Sure. I'm going to suggest a movie I just recently saw on iFlix. I'm not sure aware of it. It's called iBoy. I'd like to first off thank Kelvin for letting me know there's actually two movies called iBoy.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Netflix version, and then there is another version. The one that I vehemently enjoyed was the Netflix version of iBoy.
And you can find his review for this movie on GoWatchMovie.com.
Yes, you can. I thought it was amazing. I mean, there's not enough good things I can say about it. It just, I think maybe it was because I wasn't expecting it. And once again, if you let your guard down and you go and you see something good, it's all that much more rewarding. So I don't want to ruin the movie for anybody who doesn't already know about it or has read the review. Just go, just watch iBoy. If you like, basically like superhero origin type stories, action adventure, you know, a little bit of romance, not a lot, but it's still there. I mean, check it out. I think it's a great movie. I think anybody will enjoy it.
I will definitely be checking that one out, and I think everyone should, because I know all of you have Netflix, because who doesn't these days? Mine is The Return to Oz. Now, this one, have you seen this one?
Yes.
This is the, I guess, unofficial sequel of The Wizard of Oz. Right.
Feruza Balk, I believe, is the main character.
What's that?
Feruza Balk?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Now, this movie stands out for me for one reason. The Wheelers.
Mm.
The Wheelers, if you have never seen this movie, are some of the creepiest things you'll ever see in a quote-unquote kids movie. They are these humanoid type creatures with long arms and legs that are on all fours, and at the bottom where you would see hands and feet, there are wheels. And they skate around, and it's just freaky and weird. This movie, Return of Oz, is, I guess, just as freaky as the first one, where you have Munchkins singing about killing people. They're mm-hmm. happy that they murdered someone. Ding dong, the witch is dead. But anyway, but yeah, The Return of Oz. It's not an amazing movie. It's just one of those weird kind of lost movies that you wouldn't really normally go watch. You know,
I have it. Yeah.
But yeah, Return of Oz. You have it. We should watch that one. Which brings us to the final round of the first half of the big bad guy movie challenge thing. And wow. This is our number ones.
Number ones. This is going to be a big one.
This is a doozy because I watched The Usual Suspects again in preparation for this. Mm-hmm. Because Mr. Kaiser Sose is your number one.
Yes.
And mine is Senator Palpatine, Chancellor Palpatine, a.k.a. the Emperor of Star Wars. you want to go first?
How do you even start this one out?
Okay. I don't know. I will start out by saying I do enjoy Kaiser Sose.
Okay.
I
hear a big butt, though.
No. There's no butt, because he fits every perimeter of this tournament. Like, he had a plan. He used these people who were seemingly stronger than him. He stayed in the shadows. These two are very similar in this aspect.
They are very similar, but Palpatine eventually reveals himself.
Yes.
Kaiser Sose never does.
But I don't think that's a... I think him revealing himself is a part of his plan. Because he wants to be in power and in charge. He wants people to know that he's in charge. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Kaiser Sose has amazing lines. Like, the greatest trick...
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Yes. And that's what this man does. But the Emperor Palpatine, I guess I'll get into him. So this man has existed in all of current Star Wars canon. He was Senator Palpatine running around doing his business. He was a Sith, I guess, before this. He enacted a little plan and fooled the Jedis, fooled the Senators, fooled just about everybody, because he then became Chancellor Palpatine by starting a war against himself / the Jedis by using clones that he commissioned, by using a dead Jedi's... Yeah, it's just a crazy... and I should have wrote it all down because I looked it up. But he then uses this war against himself to vote a count of no contact tests using Jar Jar Binks, because Jar Jar is a fool, because Padme was out, I guess, fighting creatures or whatever she was doing,
mm-hmm.
delivering poor lines. But yeah, he then uses that to get a vote of no contest to become Supreme Chancellor, which means he has ultimate power and everything goes through him. And once he has that power, he shuts down all the droids, initiates Order 66, which says all Jedis be killed by their clone army soldiers, and subsequently from there becomes Emperor. And now there is the fact that, yes, Vader does kill him. But now that is also part of the thing, because there is a two Sith rule where there is a Sith master and a Sith apprentice, and it is Sith history where the apprentice always kills the master. That's just how that works. But yeah, that is him. He becomes Emperor after Supreme Chancellor, he becomes Emperor for over 30 some years before the Sith rule comes into play. But yeah, that is the Emperor of Star Wars, and in my opinion, had one of the best plans in all of moviedom, and pulled it off flawlessly. He even turned the best Jedi, other than Yoda, into his apprentice, brought him over to the dark side.
I think he was bound to be there anyway.
Who's that? Yeah.
It was going to be dark anyway. That was the whole balance thing. It wasn't balanced. They were already in control, so how can you have balance in the Force?
Exactly.
By adding more good, it's going to be evil. So, but yeah, hard to compete with all that. Only thing Kaiser really did was sit in the belly of the beast that could have locked him up and didn't break a sweat the entire
played
time.
Played them off for saps.
Played the, like, pretended to be somebody else, even though he was the main guy doing everything, controlling everything, and just pretended like he didn't exist himself and just sold a story that everybody believed and was just like, yeah, that's what happened, and then just walks out.
And he not only, like, fools them, he's pretending to be a cripple. He's pretending to be this weak, meek thing, like, when the whole time he's really the lion just waiting to pounce. Like, mm-hmm. I found that character fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about it. I just think that from, like, a villain standpoint, he plays the perfect game mm-hmm. because he doesn't reveal himself ever. He always keeps himself hidden, but still gets the results that he's looking for. He's not out there, you know, he's not like Darth Vader. He's like out there, I mean, he's the huge, you know, guy in a dark costume, mm-hmm. huge blazing lightsaber. You know, I mean, it's like he's not that guy that's out there in the open. He's like, he's hidden. He doesn't even want you to know he exists. He's so hidden. And he's okay with that. He just wants his results. He just wants to win.
Yes.
That's why I think.
Which he does, and he does.
And he doesn't fall. I mean, he doesn't get caught. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
You can argue. I mean, Palpatine's just his. Everything he did was on point. He did a really good job of planning this thing out. But ultimately, he gets taken down almost by himself because he knows what's going to happen with his apprentice. He knows what's going to happen, you know, historically. So he almost lets himself fail. But Kaiser, he doesn't. He just, like, I don't know, he just manipulates the whole entire thing. Everybody around him, he almost, I don't even know if he even believed in himself. He might even believe he wasn't who he thought he was himself. He was so good at it. But I don't know, that's just why I think Kaiser Soze is so amazing as a villain. It's because you never see him coming.
Yeah, I agree. Like, because I can remember the first time I watched that movie, The Usual Suspects, I know I did not see Mr. Soze coming. Because he just, the whole time you're seeing this meek, you know, this little guy who is basically doing what he has to survive. And then they're showing you his story and, yeah. Now,
we have to do the thing where we, like, put them on the same playing field. It's like, if we put them on the same playing field, do you think that one shines more so than the other?
I don't know if one shines. I think, because Soze has an empire, clearly, that you don't really, you hear about, but you don't see it. He has this immense fortune. He has, his name is feared even amongst the police.
Uh-huh.
Palpatine, his is kind of up front in the open. Like, you know, he's a senator, then he becomes chancellor, and then, you know, he's emperor. And then, you know, he's a Sith Lord.
When you were watching the movies, did you ever, like, think, like, why don't you guys see that he's actually evil? When he wasn't trying to be, when he wasn't pretending not to be, like, evil?
He only really revealed himself, like, when he was talking to Anakin.
Uh-huh.
Like, so,
those are mainly the scenes I'm talking about. Yeah. He's, like, so obvious that he was.
Yeah. Like, and Anakin, and he was basically playing on Anakin's weaknesses of, you know, wanting more power and wanting to save Padme. He used that love angle to manipulate him. But I do think the Jedi were fools because, as you pointed out, like, they know this prophecy that there's a chosen one that's going to bring balance to the Force. Yet, you know, it's like, well, we're at balance right now. We are the supreme, you know, power of the galaxy.
I don't know if they consider themselves in balance. I think
Kyoto kept saying we're fading and things are getting foggy and harder to see.
Well, I mean, he probably realized that they were in complete control, and that when you're in complete control like that, things start skewing. Mm-hmm. Basically, the rule you're basically living long enough to see yourself become a villain. That's a quote from another little movie. For him. So I think that he realized that.
I honestly don't want either one of these guys not to make it to the next round. Which, we're in luck. Neither one of them has to not make it to the next round this round, because filling out the bracket on GoWatchAMovie.com, I noticed that Hans Gruber is sitting up there alone and unchallenged. So, old Han is moving... either can go up against one of these guys or can be eliminated because he would have moved forward unchallenged, and we can have one of these guys move forward, and well, both of them technically move forward from this.
Right.
So that I will leave that decision up to you, sir.
No, you know what? I think it has to be a joint decision there. I could see both moving forward.
And then just eliminate all Hans?
Well, Hans.
Let's talk about Hans for a second here.
Okay.
I don't think Hans compares to either one of these guys. And I'll say that because I'm trying to think of his plot line now. It's been so long since I watched Die Hard. And don't get me wrong here. I love Hans Gruber. I think he was a great villain. But an off-duty cop spoiled his plans.
Like, well, it was the off-duty cop. The off-duty of all times. Yes, off-duty cop.
Now, what was his plan? He wanted to...
He wanted to get rich.
He wanted to get rich.
That's actually the most noble of evil plans, if there is such a thing, but...
And he did it by taking over a Christmas party of big wigs, or like their...
I don't know if they were all big wigs. No. Some of them were just office folk.
Mm-hmm. That's
a term. Office folk.
Office folk.
But, yeah.
And then, did he make demands? He made demands, right? I need to rewatch Die Hard. That's what I'm learning through this conversation now. I forget. I'm forgetting what Hans Gruber's max plan was. So,
just to get money. Whose pick was Hans?
Hans was Mr. Steve's pick.
Oh, Steve. Steve.
He reared his ugly head again.
That's all right. We love Steve.
We did.
Deep down inside.
Somewhere.
Places we don't talk about.
But, yeah. I would say we'll go ahead and push Hans back. Right. And,
yes.
And we'll go ahead and move Palpatine and Kaiser Sose forward in the tournament. And that will conclude the first round. And I'll get that updated on GoWatchMovie.com. And I think that's episode 20.
That is it.
For today, ladies and gentlemen, episode 20, The Wick is Lit. I think that's the title for this one. but yeah, now places you can find us. Actually, first, thank you to all of those people who bought coffee mugs. Once again, if you want that exclusive podcast, send us a email of the receipt or a picture of the mug. One or the other, and then I'll be emailing you that podcast once we get it recorded.
We want to see pictures of you holding the mug.
Yes. But yeah, thank you to all those who bought that. We didn't get enough. The mic should be here for next episode, the new mic, and you should hear better production with that thing. I hear nothing but good things about the mic that I'm getting. And yeah, with that said, Robert's Review Corner on GoWatchMovie.com. It is hitting like gangbusters.
Are you?
Yeah.
You liking those?
It's, yeah, I'm loving them. The people are liking them. I want you to keep them coming, sir. Help you do.
I will try.
But yeah, it's a new section on the GoWatchAMovie.com website, Robert's Review Corner. You can see the past reviews he's done. And they'll keep getting loaded on there. And once again, that's also where you can find the podcast on GoWatchAMovie.com. You can find us on Twitter at GoWatchAMovie. You can find us on Facebook, GoWatchAMovie, Facebook.com/GoWatchAMovie. Find us on Stitcher and our home, the host of the podcast, Podomatic. Just search Go Watch a Movie. And just about anywhere else you can listen to a podcast, you can find us. And that will be episode 20 this week, guys. I'm Kelvin. Go Watch a Movie.